I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. A year and a half after Superstorm Sandy devastated communities in New Jersey, some of the residents are getting angry and frustrated with a slow rate of recovery. Protesters alleging corrupt uses of Hurricane Sandy money were removed from a town hall meeting hosted by Governor Chris Christie earlier this week. The governor has been blaming the federal government, while the HUD secretary and Senator Menendez have been blaming the state. Today on Radio Times, what are the problems and where does recovery go from here? We begin our conversation with Tracy Samuelson. She's a reporter who's been covering Sandy rebuilding and recovery for Newsworks here at WHYY. And Tracy Samuelson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
What parts of New Jersey are still in need of recovery?
I think for homeowners up and down the shore, they would all say that they're in need of recovery. Obviously, there were certain parts of the shore that were more hard hit than others. But these recovery programs, these grants have been slow moving for homeowners and renters alike.
What are the complaints when you talk to people in New Jersey who are angry and frustrated?
Right, lots of angry people.
Mm-hmm. What are they so angry about?
Sure. They're frustrated by the amount they've gotten from their insurance companies, first of all, even before we get into this state grant process. And then once they do apply for these grants, they complain of lost paperwork and poor service. They complain about a lack of answers to their questions or confusing, unclear processes for applying, reasons why they're turned down for a grant or ways to appeal a grant. So there's kind of a whole range of problems. And they're, you know, for a lot of people, they've been out of their home for over a year now, and that's a very frustrating, emotional thing.
Indeed. And how many people, do we know how many people we're talking about here?
So that's an interesting question. I've actually asked the governor's office and the DCA, which is the agency that handles many of these grants, how many people are still displaced. The governor's office hasn't given me a figure, and the DCA says they don't have one. Excuse me. So it is kind of unclear to me at this point how many people are still out of their homes, but we do know that there are, you know, thousands of people who are waitlisted for these grants and still trying to get funding.
Is there some confusion about who's in charge? And I ask that because, as you mentioned, there's the Department of Community Affairs. We actually asked someone to be on the show. They declined to do that. Then you've got the quote-unquote storm czar, the New Jersey Office of Recovery and Rebuilding from
Mark
the governor's
Kazan.
Office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming there are other organizations as well. Is that part of the problem as you see it?
Yeah, I think especially from the homeowner perspective, you have this alphabet soup of government agencies, which they may not have, you know, encountered or worked with before. And so figuring out who to go to, who has the answers to your question, I think that's hard. For the most part, for homeowners, it is the DCA that they're, most of the grants for homeowners do come through the Department of Community Affairs that you mentioned. And so they've become a little bit of the poster child for a lot of people's frustrations. But then, as you mentioned, there's a lot of talk that maybe it doesn't belong with them. Maybe the buck doesn't stop with them. It goes up to the federal government.
And we're talking about, I guess, HUD, FEMA, some other
exactly.
government HUD, agencies.
HUD is the government agency at the federal level that oversees the DCA, which oversees the distribution of federal funds to homeowners.
Senator Menendez had a press conference or held a hearing, I believe it was last week. And was pretty outspoken in his criticism of the state. Well, what's his complaint?
He did come right out and say, you know, when we were allocating this funding, I thought it was a good idea for the state to be managing the distribution of aid, and I question that decision now. So he is very frustrated with the state level response. And he's frustrated that the Christie administration wants to deflect blame to the federal government. He spent a lot of time in that hearing going through some of the things that Christie points to the federal government, in particular environmental reviews and historic reviews. Each property has to be assessed for environmental and to determine whether or not it is a historic property before these grants can be distributed. And so the Christie administration says that takes time, and it's one of the kind of ridiculous things that slows down this process. And Menendez, in his questioning of HUD Secretary Sean Donovan, asked, you know, how long do those reviews take? And the answer was usually 2 weeks, and for the most complicated reviews, 6 weeks. So they were, you know, talking about weeks rather than months for those particular delays.
And so far, what the state has received, something like $1.8 billion. This is money from the federal government?
That is the money that's channeled through HUD. Is the first wave of funding was $1.8 billion, and they've announced a second round of funding, $1.4 billion, that's on its way, and the state is finalizing its plans for that money right now.
Have we learned that it's hard to spend billions of dollars or more than $1 billion, even with so many needs in the state?
We've learned it's very hard to get that money out the door, and to get it out the door in the right way. I think that is really the hard part for the state and federal government, is they want to make sure that there are the checks in place on these funds. They want to make sure that the money is going to be spent the right way on rebuilding, that people are going to be back in their homes at the end of this. And a lot of that is a response to Katrina money maybe not being spent as well as it could have been. So there's this tension between wanting to get the funding out the door quickly and wanting to make sure that it's not wasted.
We're talking, and this is a little bit in the weeds, but I think it's important. We're talking about a number of channels of money, including something called the RREM grants.
Right. This is the main grant for homeowners, the REM grant. And it is up to $150,000 for rebuilding repairs
on a home.
On a home for homeowners specifically. This isn't a program for renters. And so that is the program that was in the first round of funding. It was this $600 million pool. It's one of the biggest pools of money for homeowners. And actually, when we talk about the money that's been allocated, the state will tell you, you know, we're working with homeowners and we've allocated $190 million of that funding. But if you ask them how much of it's actually gone out the door, how much is in the hands of homeowners, as of last week, it was only $35 million. So $35 million of this $600 million pool. Now, initially, that's because they were paying people, they were reimbursing people for the work that they've done. So not only do you have to go through all, very complicated application process where they assess what money you've gotten from other sources, from your insurance company, from FEMA, perhaps, and make sure that you're not doubling up and getting more money than you should be getting. So that all takes time. We got the environmental reviews, the historic reviews, and then once you're actually figured out your award amount, they were paying people, they were reimbursing people for work as it was done. Now that actually changed last week, and they're going to allow people to get half their grant award up front, which will help move money out the door a bit faster, and will hopefully make some homeowners happier.
But that description, in part, I think explains why this is so complicated. There's so many rules and regulations you have to abide by.
There are a lot of steps. It's true.
You had a story today. It was an interesting one, and perhaps a microcosm of some of the many stories from the Sandy, both recovery and also the devastation of Sandy, having to do with Margate and the building of dunes and who gets to say and who is in control. Can you encapsulate that for us?
Sure. Governor Christie after Sandy has been very forceful, very adamant that he wants protective dunes built along the entire 127, I believe, mile coastline. And the idea is that some communities have these dunes already built by the Army Corps, and they tend to fare much better in the storm than communities that did not have the dunes. So one of his solutions to protect people in the future is to build this stretch of dunes. Now, there are to do that, they need permission from municipalities and private homeowners to, you know, basically put sand on their property.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of resistance from some private homeowners, and there's been some resistance from this one town of Margate, south of Atlantic City. They had a referendum in November where 65% of people there said, no thank you to the dunes. We like our beaches as is. And we didn't have much flooding from the ocean during Sandy. Our problems were on the bay side, so we have some ideas to fix those. But we're, you know, no thank you to your dunes. We're okay.
An interesting sort of piece of a showdown over the distribution of this money and how that money gets spent.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, as you said, there's something like 1.4, 1.5 billion that's, I guess, in the pipeline and will get distributed. Has anyone figured out how that money should be spent based on how the first 1.8 billion mm-hmm. has or hasn't mm-hmm. been spent?
So that money, the state does have a plan for that. They've just wrapped up, as of early March, a comment period where they were holding forums where people could share their thoughts on their plan to spend that next round. And they'll submit that plan to HUD. Next week is their estimate of when that will be ready. And then HUD will review it, HUD will approve it, then the state will start to enact. They say late spring, early summer in terms of when that money actually starts flowing. So it's a while still.
Well, and summer, of course, is tourist season, and New Jersey's so dependent on having beaches and also places where people can stay.
It's
some
true.
Urgency.
It's true, although you know most of the vast majority, almost all of the state's beaches were open for last summer. There was a big push for that, and Christie did deliver on his promise to have the beaches ready. You know, that upset some homeowners who thought, you know, businesses and beaches were getting more attention from the state than the homeowners. But of course, as you mentioned, those beaches are so important to the local economies there that if they weren't ready, it could have been a, you know, compounding disaster.
Only just a couple more minutes before we have to say goodbye to you, Tracy. But I know there are efforts with new building codes to put, you know, potentially houses, I guess, at risk on stilts mm-hmm. and to comply with some of these regulations, but also taking into the fact that we've got sea level rise in New Jersey. You've got a sinking state and rising seas.
Yes, and the second round of money, the message from HUD is that sea level rise should be taken into account. Now, there are some critics who say the state's plan isn't exactly doing that, but you do see all across the up and down the coast these homes lifting up, you
really?
Know, 10 feet in the air. You can drive through neighborhoods and kind of look through houses, you know, look under houses. People are lifting their homes, actually, for flood insurance reasons. A lot of people to get cheaper rates on their flood insurance, or they've been required to, if they had a certain level of damage, lift their homes up there.
I may ask you this at the beginning, but I'm just curious because it seemed that Sandy really hit the northern part of the state harder than the southern part of the state. Is that where most of this recovery and rebuilding has been focused?
You know, it's interesting. Every news report you hear a different town being called the hardest hit community. So I'm sure you remember these dramatic images of Manaloking where the ocean actually broke through the barrier island to connect with the bay in three different places, and homes were completely bashed off their foundations. So driving around, that is a more visible damage. But the southern areas, they tended to have flooding, and you have a lot of communities built along a canal. So So
it's a mixed bag,
yeah,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tracy, thank you very much for joining us in Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And that's Tracy Samuelson, reporter who covers Sandy rebuilding and recovery for Newsworks here at WHYY. Much more after this very short break, including Kevin Walsh, who was joining us here in our Philadelphia studios. And we'll be talking more about the rate of recovery or the slow pace of recovery and rebuilding post Sandy. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Invitational Furniture Show has brought together patrons and artisans for 20 years. This year's show takes place at the 23rd Street Armory just north of Chestnut Street and runs from Friday evening, April 4th to Sunday the 6th. Featuring modern and traditional tables, chairs, beds, textiles, lighting, and tabletop items. PIFS supports WHYY. Info at philaifs.com. The Philadelphia Invitational Furniture Show. Art you can live with.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. If you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes on our show, here's your chance to find out. On a special Fresh Air broadcast, Friday, March 28th, our producers and I will answer your questions about how we put the show together. To submit your questions, go to the website whyy.org/askfreshair. That's whyy.org/askfreshair. So tell us what you want to know, then tune in March 28th.
Next time on The Pulse, I am what I am.
It's about you, not about everybody else.
The promise of genetic testing and personalized medicine.
For some patients, it helps them understand why they don't need chemotherapy.
It can help make decisions, but it's not clear-cut.
You have a risk of heart disease. You have a risk of breast cancer. Not that you definitely will get it.
The Pulse, tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. As we know, Hurricane Sandy wreaked havoc on New Jersey, damaging many coastal communities. Now, a year and a half later, residents have been complaining about the slow pace of recovery. The state seems to be blaming the federal government, while the federal government seems to be blaming the state. We're talking about what's the holdup and what happens next. And joining us now is Kevin Walsh. He's an attorney and associate director at the Fair Share Housing Center. And Kevin Walsh, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, we obviously want to hear from our New Jersey listeners in particular. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm curious about how your agency, Kevin, got involved in Sandy recovery.
We've been around since 1975 working to make New Jersey's housing policies fairer. We help enforce something called the Mount Laurel Doctrine, which requires all towns to provide their fair share of housing for lower-income families and others. And when Sandy hit, we knew that this was a place where civil rights would be really important, that lower-income families especially would be harmed, that people with special needs would be harmed. And so we stepped into what we thought was an issue area that needed advocates.
Tracy was describing the frustration, the anger of New Jersey residents. Are you hearing that as well? And are they different from what she described?
No, I think that what Tracy said is right. We get calls every day on a hotline we have set up where people call in and share their experiences because they either aren't getting phone calls back, mm-hmm. they've hit a wall, or they're frustrated. Sometimes folks call up to share valuable information, but very often, as part of that, they're just venting because they're mad that they're still out of their homes.
And would it be fair to say that low-income people have been particularly hard hit? Is it possible to say that?
It is possible to say that. It's certainly possible to say that lower-income households have had a harder time recovering. The money that private insurance has provided in many instances, or just the funds people have stored up, the resources they have, lower-income families and renters especially have been very hard hit. And the state has done a really bad job of ensuring that the funds have reached African-American and Latino households who were rejected at far disproportionate to white households.
And bad job how? I mean, as I said, there's a lot of finger-pointing going on
yeah.
here. Are you pointing a finger at the state then?
On many of these issues, they're the only place to point the finger is the state. And one of the big problems has been that 80% people who were rejected were wrongly rejected from the two big programs for homeowners with an 80% error rate. That means 4 out of 5 people who were rejected should not have been. The state has acknowledged that. It's in response to a report we put out. The state has opened up the appeals process. But there's still people out there, thousands of them, who should have been in line to receive help and aren't today. And unless they file paperwork 8 months after they were denied, they're not going to get back in that line, according to the state.
Rejected, denied, why?
Because the state used incorrect data that FEMA, according to FEMA, told the state not to use for the purpose the state was using it. And so there were people who received letters saying, you're denied. They didn't tell them why they were denied. They said it was either this reason, that reason, or some other reason. And you can appeal. Some of those folks appealed, and of the folks who appealed, 80% of them were found to have been wrongly rejected. The state never acknowledged that it used the wrong data until we uncovered that this error rate was so high. Then it acknowledged the problem, but it has only taken half steps to fix the problem.
And are we talking about the Department of Community Affairs? Is that who you are holding responsible?
Well, I think that the buck stops with the governor on these issues. He's the one who's claiming the victory when there are things that he thinks has gone well. But it's certainly the whole administration, and to some extent it's HUD, which is providing oversight that needs to be held accountable on these issues and has promised that it's going to do something.
But it sounds like not enough oversight from your perspective from HUD.
I think that's a fair statement. HUD needs to do more. They've promised to do more. They've said that they're going to hold the administration accountable. In the first instance, what HUD does is just sit back and let the state operate this. When there are problems, which HUD now agrees there are, and the HUD secretary advised the Senate committee last week that they're going to do something, it seems like they may now be more likely to hold the state accountable.
There was this company, HGI, let go. It sounds like let go rather quietly at the end of, 2013. And they were responsible, I guess, as a contractor to carry out parts of this recovery.
That's right. They were they operated the front end of this. They operated the sort of retail store side of this where people could walk in, file their applications, and be determined to be eligible or ineligible. They had about a $60 million contract for several years. They claim to have burned through $50 million of that $60 million.
In the first, 6 months, 8 months?
In the first, probably closer to a year of 10 months or so. And now they've been paid $30 million. Incredibly, we've requested them under the state public records law. There's not a single report that they were supposed to file under their contract that details what they've done with that money. They were required to file weekly and monthly reports. We requested them, and we were told they don't exist, which is hard to believe, and yet if they were required by law to hand them over to us, and they had nothing to give us.
Filed reports with the Department of Community Affairs, filed them with HUD. Who were these?
Filed them with the state.
With the state.
There's one entity that administers the contract in a formal sense, one in a substantive sense, which is the Department of Community Affairs. They were both supposed to get the reports. Neither of them have them.
And they were what? Is it fired? Let go? I mean, how do you understand it? And again, it was done very quietly.
We still don't know all of the answers. There's still you almost get the feeling that they agreed to shake hands and not talk after they were let go. The governor has said a couple things suggesting that it was because they did a poor job.
Right.
But exactly what they did that they did so poorly, which we have some sense of, but the state hasn't come right out and said what it is, and so people out there who were impacted by HGI's bad decisions are looking to the state to say, this is how we're going to correct what HGI has done wrong. And thus far, there's nothing coming from the state about what they think HGI did wrong.
And was HGI responsible for all this high rejection rate that you're talking about?
Not clear.
That's not clear.
It's not clear who made that bad decision. At the end of the HGI was probably involved in it in some way. But those are the sorts of things that before we spend another $1.5 billion of desperately needed money, we have to correct those problems. HUD has to correct those problems, and the state has to begin acknowledging what went wrong so it doesn't happen again.
There is a storm czar. I don't know if you're a fan of the word czar.
Mark Ferzan, yeah.
And he's the New Jersey, head of the New Jersey Office of Recovery and Rebuilding, appointed by Chris Christie. Is he sort of, as a czar, overseeing all this? Does he call the shots, from your understanding?
It seems that there's probably some combination of the governor's office, the Department of Community Affairs, and Mark Ferzan who are making these decisions. It's not exactly clear. That's not a position that is set by statute where one's responsibilities would be clear. And for the most part, with few exceptions, administration officials like Ferzan have declined to appear in the legislature to testify about the decisions that they're making. So there's not much transparency about how that operates. Having said that, Ferzan ran the three hearings where people showed up and shared their feelings. Mm. So he has participated somewhat, right, just not in a way where he has to answer questions.
And that's Kevin Walsh. He's an attorney, also associate director of the Fair Share Housing Center. And we are talking about, and you'll pardon this pun, navigating a sea of bureaucracy related to Sandy funding issues. As we know, Sandy devastated many communities in New Jersey about a year and a half ago. And there is some growing frustration and anger about the distribution of money, where it is going, transparency. And again, we want to hear from our New Jersey listeners at 1-888-477-9499. And we'd like to hear from you as well, whether you think the money has been well spent or is there a better way to spend it. 1-888-477-WHYY, Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I know your organization also has complained about that renters, as you mentioned, had been sort of not a priority when it comes to the distribution of funds. And is that because, I mean, renters are renting, what, Section 8 housing, or is it related to, you know, renting housing that's owned by a landlord and they don't have the money to rebuild?
Yeah, so there's, you know, these are just renters of any income, and not just lower income, although the renters who were impacted are disproportionately lower income and disproportionately African American and Latino. So the important civil rights consequences to not getting the renter homeowner proportions correct. 40% of renters were 40% of the people impacted were renters, but only 25% of the funding is going to renters. And there has also been a problem in which, although Monmouth and Ocean County have the renters there were impacted at rates same rates across the state, a lot of the money for renters is going to Essex County, which had relatively little damage. Hmm. The landlord programs that were set up for landlords to participate in were really not successful, have not been successful. Landlords either aren't applying or they've been discouraged when they have participated by the bureaucracy that's involved. And so what we're facing is a situation in which a lot of the lower wage folks who work at the shore, who are part of the economy you were discussing earlier, don't have places to live. Wow. Anywhere close to their job, anywhere, perhaps even in the counties they were living in, because the state overall has done a poor job of providing help for renters.
So where are they living?
They're probably doubled up. They're probably living far away. They may have figured out some. They may be living in a place that has more rental housing. You know, New Jersey overall has a tight housing market, one of the most expensive in the country. And so when Sandy hit, you take a tight real estate market, and it's just made it worse, especially for lower income folks.
And I was surprised when you said 40% of people affected were renters.
Correct.
Wow. That seems high.
Yeah, it's well, you know, that there's a lot of folks who rent who are sometimes folks who are just, you know, getting started. Most people at some point in their lives have rented. And there's a lot of folks who will rent all the time.
Do you think there are, I mean, you mentioned African Americans, Latinos. Do you think there have been racial disparities when it came to approving money or approving vouchers or approving what people need?
Yeah, African-American people impacted by the storm were rejected from the state's two biggest homeowner programs at 2.5 times the rate of white applicants. No explanation coming from the state, which has not denied that statistic.
Right.
And although they've attempted to point to some things, there's been nothing that would suggest that that's okay in some way. And there's certainly alarm bells going off in the state's civil rights community. The NAACP has raised it. The Latino Action Network is also concerned with Latinos being rejected at 50% the rate of whites. And the state has sort of tried to suggest that we're saying that what they've done is intentional discrimination. And we're not saying it's not that. We don't know what it is. And when you have something... when you have that much smoke, you better make sure there's not fire. And the state has simply not done that.
And what you're talking about is more transparency. I mean, more transparency would allow you and others to look and see what the explanation is.
Yeah, I think it's more transparency. And I think that it's an openness to actually have a conversation rather than having these staged conversations where people, if they challenge the governor, are shouted down, and where there's just simply not an openness with people in the administration in a forthright way answering questions.
And has your organization been able to talk to the Christie administration?
We've certainly had conversations, but they're not ones that are enlightening at the end of the day.
And what does that mean?
They just don't address these things. So, you know, even in legislative testimony, they skirt these things, or they try to reframe them in a way that makes it seem like they haven't done something outrageous by saying we didn't intentionally discriminate. Well, all right, let's accept that for purposes of the conversation. Why were 2.5 times, why were African Americans rejected at 2.5 times that of whites?
Let me get some callers, some tweets as well. In fact, we have a tweet from Tony. How does the recent New Jersey Supreme Court ruling that COA, C-O-A-H, must publish new rules affecting Sandy recovery? Can you answer that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the big problems we have in New Jersey is that we have 565 towns that control their zoning. One of the reasons we have such a tight housing market is because those towns have prevented, in many instances, families from moving in by simply changing the zoning. And that especially hurts lower-income families. So what has recently happened is the Supreme Court told the Christie administration that if by November you haven't figured out issues with regard to how to implement the Mount Laurel Doctrine, then something's going to happen. And that would, you know, the problem is that the Christie administration's housing policies have been somewhat destructive from the start, in our view, and that left us at a place in Sandy where there really wasn't many opportunities to build that would match the need that was out there.
Let me get another Tony. This is Tony from Manahawkin. Tony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Everybody's having obviously issues. One of my big concerns that I see is there's a lot of construction going on, and it's actually inhibiting local businesses from attracting tourists. You know, the Seaside Heights in particular is a very lucrative place, and it's a source of income for a lot of local businesses. And with all the construction that's going on, Route 35 is still a complete wreck, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere. And a lot of businesses are worried that, you know, last year they thought that they'd be able to get more money in. They got less money in than they thought they were going to get, so everybody fell behind. And this year looks like it's not going to be very much better because everything's slow going. And a lot of local businesses, say what you will about Seaside, but a lot of those people rely on the tourism there to pay the bills.
Well, Tony, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'd just be curious, Kevin, about your response.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's the sort of thing that seems like it's going to take a while to get straightened out. We hear a lot about those sorts of problems from folks, and that the pace in repairing isn't as quick as folks would like it to be. And I'm sure that applies to the highways as well, to road and infrastructure, where, you know, there's been a fair amount of criticism as well. I think what people... you know, we've also heard that from small business owners that they've been upset at the programs where they were felt like they were not responsive. The state wasn't responsive to their needs as well. So there's, you know, the unfortunate reality on this is it seems increasingly hard to find good stories. And as a state, mm-hmm. we need to find more positive stories of people bouncing back. Well, we need to see where there's light at the end of the tunnel, and I think there is. We just need to correct some of these problems that thus far haven't been addressed.
And we're almost up at a break here, but there is more money coming into the state. Do you think the state is prepared to spend it wisely based on your experience?
Well, I don't think that they're quite there yet, and I think that they, of the $1.8 billion that we received so far, there's only about $200 or $300 million that have left the bank, that are now in other people's bank accounts other than state or federal government. So in addition to the money we have that's coming in, $1.5 billion, there's still money that we can that's there that we can do something good with and fix the problems. We have another $1.5 billion coming in, and hopefully HUD will make sure that before those funds arrive, the state has corrected the problems that we're experiencing.
And we're talking with Kevin Walsh. He's an attorney and also associate director of the Fair Share Housing Center. We have State Senator Jennifer Beck waiting in the wings. She is going to join us after this very short break, and we want to get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We're talking about recovering from Sandy in this hour of Radio Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Network for New Music is joined by Pulitzer Prize-winning composer John Harbison in a series of concerts and workshops from April 4th through April 6th. These events celebrate John Harbison's music and his love of jazz, poetry, and American folk song, with new music by Harbison and Ori Kane, James Primish, Terrell Stafford, Anna Wiesner, Bobby Zankel, and others. For tickets and information about these concerts and workshops, networkfornewmusic.org.
Little English Majors.
His name is Fred.
His name is Fred.
In a classroom in Portland, Oregon, teachers teach English as a first and a second language. How language is leading to learning and teaching in new ways. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Fringe Arts proudly supports WHYY. Following the world premiere in New York, choreographer Terry O'Connor and his dance company bring Bleed to Fringe Arts Waterfront Stage March 27th through 29th for three performances only. Using a new choreographic language, Bleed combines dancers, ideas, and approaches to create an experience that at once conveys multiplicity and singularity. Bleed is at Fringe Arts March 27th through 29th. Tickets are available at fringearts.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about recovering from Superstorm Sandy, navigating a sea of bureaucracy. And again, Kevin Walsh staying with us for the rest of the hour, Associate Director of the Fair Share Housing Center. And joining us now is State Senator Jennifer Beck. She represents Monmouth County, and that is the 11th District in New Jersey. And Senator Beck, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty Moss-Cohen, and I can't even believe I'm on the radio with you. I have been a fan since I was in grade school and have been listening to National Public Radio, which I know sometimes your show airs on.
Yes.
And I have to say I'm kind of nervous because I've been such a fan of yours for so long.
Well,
so,
anyway. I'm blushing and also feeling very, very, very old if you've been listening to me since you were a little girl. But nonetheless, let me ask you about Monmouth County and how
sure.
how devastated your county was by Sandy and what it looks like today.
Well, we sustained about 20% of the overall damage statewide. Ocean County outstriked us. You know, they're a little closer, maybe 40% or more. And what you see right now is a lot of construction. People are starting to build back, starting to elevate. It's a slow process. It is a very convoluted process.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of the things I noted as I've been following what's going on in New York as much as I've been following is what's going on in New Jersey is that Mayor de Blasio and his former executive director of the Build It Back program, both have noted the convoluted, archaic process that HUD has in place for residents to receive these monies that oftentimes makes it just very slow and tough to navigate.
And we have been talking in this hour about the bureaucracy that you mentioned, and there is some finger-pointing going on between the state and between the feds, and it sounds like you're pointing your finger at HUD and the feds?
This is what I'm going to say. This effort requires complete cooperation between the federal government, the state, and local governments. All three have to be on board and working in concert together. So the finger pointing doesn't do us much good.
Right.
I will say that HUD does have some very strict requirements that you have to adhere to if you want to access these grant dollars. So, for example, you can't start work on your home once you've submitted an application for their housing grant, the REM grant, as it's called in New Jersey. That's frustrating to people, right? But it's something that the state of New Jersey has appealed. It's something that Mayor de Blasio has approached HUD about as well. And they simply say, no, you can't do work until we're overseeing and making sure the work is being done in the right way until we've approved you for a grant. We won't reimburse you for that work. And that's really just one small example, but those are repeated time and again and are frustrating to residents.
And I can certainly understand that frustration, but do you also think that there were some lessons learned from this, the Katrina recovery and some of the waste, some of the fraud, some of the abuse that came out of that, and that there is a need for some kind of oversight?
Of course, and that really is where this is coming from, so it's coming from the right place. They don't want to see money get wasted and not get to the people that need it. And duplication of benefits is something that is also very frustrating to people. Mm-hmm. That is a HUD and FEMA and, frankly, all these federal agencies' requirement that you don't get benefits, say, for rental housing twice. You can't access the SHRAP program and also access another program and get twice the benefit so that you're knocking out other people that need it. In terms of New Jersey's progress, you know, I heard Kevin's comments. The truth is that New Jersey has really done quite a bit more than both New York State and New York City. We've obligated $986 million of the $1.8 billion, compared to New York, which has only obligated $241 million, and New York City, which has only obligated $184 million. And now remember, these are reimbursement programs. Mm-hmm. So when Kevin says, hey, the money is only $200 million out of the bank, which isn't accurate, it's actually $314 million, but it's reimbursement. So some of the money may not be out of the bank because I have to submit receipts in order to get that money out of the bank. So if the work hasn't been completed yet, the money might be obligated but not spent. We have had some fits and starts. HGI, which was a contractor that New Jersey used to help administer the program, performed poorly,
right,
to say the least. I have horror stories. I'm really at a grassroots level with hundreds of residents, and I know the horror stories, and I know how bad they were. That's why they were fired within 6 months. And there are certainly some lessons learned,
sure,
as we go along.
Well, let me get Kevin back into the conversation, give him a chance to respond to your comments. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I think that Senator Beck makes several good points about things the federal government can change. I think that the identification of HGI as a problem is one that is legitimate. What I think that we need to make sure of as we go forward, though, for instance, is that there are areas where the state can improve and the federal government can improve, and we need a list of those things. We need the administration to identify specifically what it thinks is the problem and make a comprehensive list so we can address that. I think that what the point the senator made about not being able to fix your house while your grant is pending, that probably makes a lot more sense in a context in which the state is moving quickly.
Mm-hmm.
When the delays have gone on for as long as they have, and people only now, we got a call yesterday from a woman, the first time somebody was out to her house was last week. And, when you have that, that's not the federal government that caused that. And so this is the blame game isn't a good one. But the accountability game is a good one. And what we need to know is where the problems are the result of the federal government's policies and specifically what should change. I'd love to see a one-pager from that on the administration. And then I'd love to see them to do another one-pager on what specifically they've done poorly and how they're going to correct it. Because that's what people want at the end of the day. They don't care who's messed up. What they want to know is who's going to fix it and what those specific fixes are, so next time around we move more quickly and efficiently.
Jennifer Beck, two one-pagers, would that satisfy some of your concerns?
I'm certain I could come up with two one-pagers pretty quickly, you know, but I think it's hard to pull one individual out of a sea of 5,100 that have been given this housing grant, because remember, there could be many reasons for that delay. They have to verify income. They have to verify all the other funds they've received, and then the state and the feds go back and make sure that they submitted the right numbers. Mm-hmm. They have to present receipts. They have to present estimates. I mean, it goes on and on, all of these different requirements that are imposed. So there could be many reasons why no one showed up at their house at this point. They have to present a certificate that shows they were substantially damaged. The biggest issue I think the state of New Jersey faces right now is the fact that in the first round of funding, we got about $1.8 billion.
That's right.
In the second round, we got $400 million less, even though we have 7,000 people on our waiting list for funds to rebuild their homes. And now I'm hearing that the third round of HUD, in terms of the state of New Jersey, may be less than $1 billion for New Jersey. We may get really shortchanged, and not only that, they're going to rework the program so that it's some kind of rebuild-by-design competition and may not provide any funds towards people's homes. So we're going to have 4,000 people sitting on the waiting list who thought they went through all of this stuff, and the feds are going to change the rules and not provide them with any dollars to rebuild their homes. And remember, New Jersey had to limit the universe. So the people that qualify for these housing dollars are only people that were substantially damaged. That means that more than 50% of the assessed value of your home was lost. So there are a bunch of people that may fall slightly below that, that don't qualify for this program at all. I mean, we know 365,000 homes were damaged through the course of the storm, and there's only about somewhere 40,000 primary residences and 15,000 rental units that were substantially damaged. So to think that we have all these substantially damaged people that will get nothing in the third round under HUD, that's where I would like to see Kevin and his team join me in advocating. To think that Secretary Donovan would change the program and make this a rebuild by design contest, and he gets to pick what infrastructure projects get funded with HUD money instead of providing homeowners with assistance, I think is a travesty.
Do you think it's a travesty, Kevin?
To my knowledge, HUD hasn't announced yet what it's doing with that money, and I think that we have to keep working and allocating funds in ways that gets people back in their homes, including renters.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that the challenge that we face is as we go forward, we need to know what all the problems are, both state and federal. And I get Senator Beck's focus is on the federal ones.
That
makes sense in some ways. The problem with that is, though, that we also have to fix the state problems. And what we need to do is both ask HUD the tough questions, but then we need Senator Beck and other legislators to ask the governor the tough questions about why so far out so many people are still out of their homes and how we're going to use the money more efficiently. And I look forward to seeing that one pager because I've got mine done. And
excellent.
And if we can get where the state needs to improve, we can then start working together both to push for changes at the state level and to push for changes at the federal government. We can't focus on just one over the other.
Let me raise another issue, and this is looking into the future, but maybe not too distant future. And to you, Jennifer Beck, and there's this idea called planned retreat. And New Jersey, as we know, the oceans are, the sea level is rising. It is measurable. The land is sinking in certain areas. And that at some point, perhaps it's going to mean planned retreat for some
right.
communities in New Jersey. Is New Jersey ready to even start thinking about that, Jennifer Beck?
So we have allocated some of the federal money that was appropriated for a Blue Acres program, which will allow for the buyback of lands that are in homes that are continuously flooded, not necessarily just because of a hurricane, but maybe even just in a bad rainstorm, and begin to purchase some of those properties. You know, sometimes that is a smooth process and sometimes it's not. Some people right. want to sell, some people don't. But that is certainly one way to approach it. I think our challenge is that we don't have nearly enough money to purchase as many as we would like. And, you know, one of the things that I've raised, and there may be excellent policy reasons for this, but I don't know them. Thus far, the state of New York has received, you know, $7.1 billion. And the state of New Jersey has received $3.2 billion in CDBG money,
mm-hmm.
and yet we had roughly the same amount of damage. We had $37 billion in damage versus New York's $42 billion. So I think, you know, for us, look, there may never be enough money to purchase all the properties we want to and should, but I think we need to understand how this funding is being allocated, why New Jersey is slated to continuously get less and less when we have a huge demand, both for people that need to repair their homes and also for, you know, programs like the Blue Acres program, where people want to sell and move out. It's something that our federal representatives need to respond to. I'm certainly not saying the state of New Jersey is perfect. They're not. They've got their share of problems, too. But the amount of money that we get is going to dictate how effective we can be in our recovery.
Can you stay with us for about five more minutes, Senator Beck, only because I want to get a couple of callers in on the conversation.
Sure.
Okay, let me get Stuart from, looks like, Weirdtown, New Jersey. And, Stuart, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, I live in Weirdtown, New Jersey, which is right on Barnegat Bay. I have two questions. One, they said that people reject it for certain reasons. I'd like to know the reasons why they reject it, because I applied and was rejected initially. This January, I finally got approval for the grant, and there's so many stipulations and rules, and one of the ones I don't understand is I've already probably put $61,000 into the house because we tore it down and started over again, but I guess there's some rules that says if any money that you take out of your pocket after your initial application, you don't qualify for certain funding from the REM grant. And if you could answer those questions for me, I appreciate it. I'll take my answer off there. Thank you very much.
Okay, and so just remember, this is a radio show, so you might not get a full answer. I'm going to give you just a very quick chance to respond, Kevin, because I want to squeeze one more caller in if we can.
Yeah, my understanding is that that is the governor originally told people to go ahead and rebuild. For whatever reason, wasn't aware of the federal requirement. In my view, the federal requirement would be better if it were relaxed to take into account what people are experiencing and their need to rebuild. And yet, at the same time, there was, I think, in signals that that people received that they should go ahead and spend money when federal law didn't allow for them to be reimbursed.
And just as this,
so that's
go ahead. About a minute.
Totally accurate. So this is what doesn't make any sense. HUD will reimburse you for any repair work you did before you submitted your application for their grant program. So you can get, the governor was not wrong. He was correct. Go ahead and do work. But once you submit that grant application, any work done after that application is submitted, they won't reimburse you for. To me, that's really nonsensical. I mean, if they're willing to pay for it before the application versus after, I'm not sure I understand that difference. But it is a federal rule that they won't pay for damages you repair while they are considering your application.
Yeah,
and New York is fighting this too.
And I think that's probably right. I think the problem is that the federal rule probably assumes that it won't take so long to get the money out the door, and that's where the rubber hits the road, unfortunately.
And I have to jump in here only. And one little note here that Kevin told me about, March 31st is the deadline for people if you have been rejected, I guess, for one of these grants. That's the deadline to what, reapply?
To reapply to appeal the determination. There were thousands of people who were rejected wrongly. The state acknowledges this. They've reopened the appeals process. There's a process now set up. The deadline is March 31st. You can check out our blog at fairsharehousing.org, where you can get the forms and everything in order to appeal those determinations.
Kevin Walsh, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And Senator Jennifer Beck, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. I'm a huge fan. It was my pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us. And again, State Senator Jennifer Beck from Monmouth County in New Jersey, and Kevin Walsh. He's the Associate Director of the Fair Share Housing Center. And we began our conversation with Tracy Samuelson, who's been covering Sandy rebuilding and recovery for Newsworks here at WHYY. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program and to carry on the conversation we started here on the air. I'm Marty Moscow. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.